Spring camp is right around the corner, and we've got 5 questions burning on the back of our mind that are probably on the minds of a lot of Seminole fans. We're talking about that today. Michael, there's some new rules and penalties proposed to college football that just kind of make you scratch your head. Yep. Also, baseball. What's happening with the baseball team? Good, bad, ugly? We're going to talk about it. And basketball. They deserve to get talked about because Luke Laux and company has really started to finish the season strong. So, man, a lot of stuff to get into today. It's been a week since we've recorded, so got to get back in the saddle, man. Excited to be back talking about all 3 sports today. And you were actually at the Arlington series, and we're going to talk about that too, man. Really cool experience. So just can't wait to jump into this episode. Appreciate all you guys tuning in. But before we jump into that, Michael, how are you, my friend? And glad to be back on the mic for another episode.
Yeah, glad to be back. We kind of took a week off. You know, we had our we were flying high going into last weekend, and then kind of had a somebody just struck our sails a little bit there. Yep. In the name of Auburn and Nebraska. And so we kind of just wanted to take a week to cool, have cooler heads prevail. But now we're ready to talk about it all and also look at, hey, we're getting ready to jump in the spring. Tour duties getting ready to finish up. And now we're getting into the off seasons of questions. What is this going to look like in 2026 for FSU football? So let's get into this.
Exactly, man. We were, you know, we had kind of been leaning on baseball, but you got basketball and football to talk about, tour duty workouts, like you said, man. Lots going on right now. We're about to end up having a lot of stuff to talk about. And today is one of those because, you know, Michael, as you go into the spring camp, everyone's kind of like, this is your first proving ground, right? You're like, you're not going to know exactly what the polished product is going to look like in the fall, but this gives you your first taste of like, this is going to work. This is not going to work.
Right,
how's this going to go? And we're going to talk about it all today. What are the 5 questions that are burning on the back of our mind that most of Florida State fans probably have on the back of theirs? And we're going to try and answer those today. And if you have any comments or questions that are on the back of your mind, drop them in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. I'd love to know what you're looking for this spring. Now, Michael, before we jump into this topic, real quick, I want to bring you a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Now, these guys got great FSU gear, whether you're headed to Hauser, whether you're packing the Plex, whether you're just getting ready for next football season from home, you can shop in-store at 1415 Timberlane Road or online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and save 10% with code SPEAR. So we appreciate you guys supporting them and for them supporting us. That's alumnihall.com and save 10% with code SPEAR. So, Michael, let's jump into this spring camp, right? Obviously, we know, like you said, tour duty workouts are going on right now. We've seen some clips coming out about that. Basically, just trying to get your body ready for this spring camp. Now, spring camp does open up around March 19th and runs through April 21st. And so it's not far off, right? It feels like it's still a little bit of ways away, but that's going to get here sooner than later. And so I think, Michael, when we go through these questions here, we've pretty much come to terms that we've agreed on about the same 5 questions here because they're really that big of questions in the back of our mind. And I think there's one place that you got to start because the rest of these, you might not even get answered. And that is, will FSU close camp this year? That is probably the number one question as we go into this episode because all these other questions that we want to answer to, if they lock things down again, you might not get those answers. And so we might be flying blind into the fall again. Now, as far as my thoughts on closed or open practices or camp or anything like that, I'm really kind of indifferent. I supported it last year whenever they made the announcement. I thought, hey, let's lock out all the distractions. Let's see what happens. Maybe this will help. It did not help. So I don't know. I will say I feel like if you already shut the door, it's easier to keep the door shut than to open it and shut it again. So if you want to keep it closed, you could just continue to be like, we're just going to maintain our policy from last year in spring. It's closed. I think that was a Gus Malzahn decision anyway, at least heavily influenced. So it will be interesting to see how they treat this because Mike Norvell is one that's always been wide open with the media. Also, spring game. Will there be a spring game this year? We know they've been canceling a lot of them. I could care less whether there's a spring game for Florida State because they treat it like a glorified practice anyway with half the starters out. But, man, as we get into these questions, I think the number one question right now is, are we going to be able to see anything in the spring camp or not? And I think, as I kick it back to you, the important part is, it's a tough cookie to crack, man, because on the one hand, like, I don't care what you have to say, right? Because we've been through this for so many years with Mike Norvell. Like, the only thing I care about is what August 29th or 27th or whatever it is against New Mexico State, the next game against SMU.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
That's what I want to know. That's what I want to see on the field. I don't care what you got to say. But you can glean things through an open camp of, uh-oh, that guy's not good. Uh-oh, right. That guy's pretty decent. And right now, for Florida State fans, I think we need something to stoke the fire of excitement. I mean, yeah. Going into that New Mexico State game, if you haven't seen anything, you're just coming off of back-to-back disappointment years with nothing to spark your enthusiasm, that's going to be a tough sell. Whereas if you feel good about some stuff and you're like, hey, man, maybe this Ashton Daniels kid is better than I thought, that gives you some hope going into the season. So it's a tough nut to crack for Mike Norvell, but, you know, I can see both sides of it. But, man, that's the big question starting off is, will they open or close camp this year?
Yeah, and you have to go back to Mike Norvell's philosophy has always been he wanted the program to be open because he felt like the best programs get covered the best way by having access. Now, obviously, you look at the Nick Sabans, even when Jimbo Fisher was here, they were very much closed off to the media, one voice, that's all it was. But early on in Mike Norvell's tenure, for Florida State to get sold in the way that it needed to, he wanted to have open access for the media to have. Now, you come off that, you know, 2-10 season, and there was a lot of things that happened during that season. You know, you have the conflation of the talent by Mike Norvell and Nick Saban and game day and over there in Ireland saying this is an NFL type. But then you also had the media, which was us too as well. Like, we have to put ourselves in that as well, who were saying, yeah, this is going to be a great team. And then it turned out not to be a great team. So then you bring in Gus Malzahn. And Gus has been a big proponent of, no, lock this down, don't have access. And so he heavily influenced Mike Norvell's decision around this. What I would say now, though, is, Mike, you are trying to get the fans excited about something, right? Because here's the thing. If we go into the season and we know nothing about this team, and the first glimpse we get is the New Mexico State game, which, again, like you said, Jesse, you're right. That's all we care about. What does it look like against game one? But if we get nothing before then, if we can't see anything before then, especially if there's not a spring game, all the negativity just gets amplified. There's an old saying, if you leave a gap, of a story, people will naturally fill in that gap with their own story, right?
Yep.
And so if there's nothing to show for fans to see, if there's no progress to be seen, not told by you, because no one trusts, like, your credibility right now among the FSU fan base is at an all-time low. Your approval rating is probably at zero into the negatives. So it can't be you. We have to see images. We have to see video of these guys going hard on the field, showing things, right? That is what's going to get us. That is what's going to rebuild your credibility, Mike Norvell. So in my mind, if you can even give us just a glimpse once a week, give us one day that media gets access to practices, media gets access to pre-workouts, stuff like that. Let us get a little bit of that to give the fans something to whet that appetite so that they can start believing, hey, this is what we're working towards and striving towards when New Mexico comes into town.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And a couple of things I just want to add on that before we move on to the next question is, I think, one, you have to understand that you are right about the filling in your own narrative. Like, if you don't define a narrative, they will for you. And correct. So the hard part is, I do remember in 2024, a lot of us pumped that team up because it looked like it was going to be decent on paper. And I do remember there being a couple of reports that came out that were like, okay, either
hold the brakes.
We're either this is going to be good or that's going to be bad, and we just can't tell in a vacuum, or we just don't know yet. If you open the book and it looks terrible and it's a bad story, well, then at least when 2026 comes around, we're going to know what to expect, exactly. Right? So you're not setting unreal expectations. And the other point that I was going to make is it's a different era in college football, right? Nowadays, you're asking fans to invest in these players.
Yep.
We are shareholders in a company. And, you know, when I watched Ashton Daniels' intro interview, I liked it. I liked what he had to say. I know it doesn't mean anything what you say to Mike. I know it only matters what you do on Saturdays in this business. I understand that. But there's a big difference between rolling a guy out at a podium like a Jordan Travis, a guy that you fall in love with, a guy that can be the face of your program.
Yep.
You know, like I said, even in the Ashton Daniels aspect, when I listened to his intro interview, I was like, okay, I kind of like this kid. He's real. He's honest. He talked about how things didn't go well at Stanford and he learned a lot at Auburn and what he's trying to do here. And those are the types of things that's like, okay, I know who I'm investing in now, right? If you're just asking me for NIL money for players I can't get to know personally, I don't know their story, I don't get to hear from them, I don't get to see them practice, I only get to see a bad product on Saturdays, good luck getting my
good
money.
Luck. Yep.
Good luck. And so I think you have to treat this game a little bit differently nowadays with that. And so that's, to me, I think that's one of the pros towards opening things up. Now, if it looks bad, it's going to look bad in front of you and everybody. But that's just a risk you're going to take. That's what you assembled as a team. Right. So it reflects on you anyway. But like you said, with the approval rating at an all-time low, you need to do something. And, and we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about that later. Now, question number two for me, Michael, is, and again, we agreed on a mutual five questions here, is I think the next biggest question on everybody's mind, and what are we doing at quarterback? Mm. And this is going to be one that might be a little bit tougher to answer than we thought, although I don't think it is, because the caveat of Malachi Marshall will not be at spring camp. He's going to be a summer enrollee. So your third arm of that quarterback race, or third leg, I guess you should say, three-legged race at quarterback. Sometimes it feels like Florida State's running a three-legged race. So he's not going to be there. And you would like to see him involved in that competition, which again is why I think it's Ashton Daniels' job to lose. We've heard some hints about things that Mike Norvell said on TV interviews and things like that. I still think it's his job to lose. But from the quarterback competition position, whether or not Malachi Marshall is there, I just want to know how this kid looks. How does Ashton Daniels look? How does Kevin Sperry look? Does Kevin Sperry look like a guy who can push Ashton Daniels? Or does he look like a guy that's like, he had a couple of good games against East Texas A&M and Kent State. We like him on paper. He's a recruit out of high school ranks, but he clearly is not ready, right? And we've saw that with Brock Glenn in the past. We saw that with certain scenarios where you heard good things in practice that just weren't ready on game day. And so that's kind of what – that's the next biggest question, because going from 2 to 5, we're going to assume that we can see practice now, right? Let's assume we can see practice. So if we're watching practice now, the question number two for me, man, is how's the quarterback competition going? You're clearly not going to name a starter in the spring. But I just want to know truly how close that gap is, how much Sperry is pushing Daniels, and how well is Daniels grasping this offense? Because another kind of asterisk that you can throw on this quarterback competition is, remember, Ashton Daniels is not going to be playing in the same offense that he came here to play in.
Correct.
So how is he adapting to Mike Norvell's offense? How is Kevin Sperry adapting to Mike Norvell's offense? And how close is that gap? Do we have a true competition, or is it basically Ashton Daniels getting 80% of the reps and Kevin Sperry just being groomed as a QB2 to compete with Malachi Marshall in the summer?
Yeah. And I think this is huge, because you look at the last two, and I'm not going to, we've rehashed the history of high school quarterbacks under Mike Norvell, but you look at the last two, Brock Glenn and Luke Kermahawk, when they got a chance to get into the game, it was a disaster both times, both of them. And then you saw when Sperry was able to get in the game against East Texas A&M and Kent State, obviously that's a far, far cry of competition level that he would face if he was in a normal game. And then you saw him get into the Stanford game, and
he didn't look the same.
It was different. And so my thing is, I agree with you in the sense of, I do think this has always been Ashton Daniels' job to lose. One, because the Nelson kid wouldn't be here until till the summertime. So he's going to miss spring practice, all like that stuff. Also, Sperry, for what we saw so far, wasn't ready for the moment when the moment came. So this is Ashton Daniels' job to lose. What I want to know as a part of this question is, can Sperry himself or Nelson be
Marshall?
Marshall, as good to get the coaches actually believing this is a true quarterback competition? That's really the question in your question. Can these two guys get the coaches to believe this is more of a QB race competition than it actually is? And I'm not saying it's not, Jesse. I'm not saying that they're not going in with the mentality of, well, it's Daniel's job to lose, but I really want to see what these other QBs are.
Right.
I'm saying that they're looking at it more so, it's Daniel's job to lose, so please, Lord, don't let him lose it, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what they might be thinking in the background. Yeah. And I'm not saying that this kid can't. Again, he could be a perfect fit for Mike Norvell's version of this offense. We've seen when Mike Norvell gets the right kind of QB, a la Jordan Travis, this offense can hum. And Daniels is a bigger kid. He can run. He can make the short throws. It's more about like just the consistency over time. Can Mike Norvell get that out of him? I think that is, if that's not the most important question coming out of spring, it's definitely 1A, because I know what 1B might be too as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's huge, because I think this is really, I mean, the trenches are going to determine a lot throughout the course
of
the season.
But this is,
yeah, this is the one of the top building blocks of how your season's going to look is what you get at quarterback, because we've seen the last couple of years, you know, again, that last year's team, you put Jordan Travis on that team, that team's probably an 8 to 9 win team.
Yep.
DJU 2024, there was so many problems. It wasn't DJU, but you give him a better quarterback, maybe it's at least not a 2-win team. But I think the point that you make is great. And what I first thought of was 2024, right? When you had DJU, it was his job to lose. Yeah. I think it's the same thing with Ashton Daniels. And to be fair with Ashton Daniels, I think there's some upside that I'm talking myself into on this kid. But it could totally turn out to be like the last two veteran broken quarterbacks that we had. But when you go back to 2024, remember, it was DJU's job. And even when things weren't good, it was DJU's job to lose because there was no one good enough to take it. It took a broken hand to finally make a swap at quarterback, even though we were all
saying
people in the
forever.
Stands were literally cheering, bench DJU or whatever. And, you know, that was the big thing, was benching him for Brock Glenn. Then he comes in, we had like an okay game against Clemson, and then things just kind of went off the rails again. And it was like you immediately saw that it was DJU's job to lose, but there was no one good enough to take it. And so that's what I want to see, to your point, with Kevin Sperry and Ashton Daniels. It's probably Ashton Daniels' job to lose, but is there anyone in that quarterback room that's good enough to take it if things don't go well? Or are you going to take like a Ashton Daniels 80% game, a B game over a Kevin Sperry A game because he's just that much better? That's what I'm looking for out of the quarterback competition. Like you said, I want to know if it's a true competition or if we have QB1, if things go so far off the rails, we'll pick the best out of Marshall and Sperry to be QB2 to get a shot. That's really what I want to know. Now, looking at question number 3, and these 3 and 4 are going to be synonymous with each other. You could almost group them together because, to your point, this is 1A and 1B, basically, 2A, 2AB at this point. And I'm going to go ahead and start with the defensive line because I think it's a little bit bigger of concern for me, mostly because I have my concerns with the offensive line, but I also trust Herb Hand.
Yeah.
Right now, I ain't trusting meatloaf, potloaf, pot roast. I don't know what potloaf is. I'm not trusting any of that. I'm not trusting any of that type. Whatever meat dish you want to call it, I ain't trusting it right now. You just hadn't seen enough, right? And so that's why I start with the defensive line. Now, when we talk about what I'm looking for in the defensive line, I want to see who steps up, right? Yeah. Because there are positions open on this defensive line. Is this Rylan Kennedy kid going to be good enough to be a starting defensive end for you? What about Tylon Lee? What about the guy, what about Kevin Wynn? Like, we need you to go from 40 snaps to 400 snaps this year, bro. You have got to show that you're ready for that workload. But almost more importantly than that, because I have a feeling you're going to see, you know, obviously Mandrell is going to be in there. Daryl's going to be in there. Daryl Desir, not Daryl Jackson. You're going to have Daniel Lyons are going to be in the conversation. You got the guys you pretty much could pencil in starters right now. I'm almost equally interested with this defensive line is how does the depth look? Like, when they cleared out this defensive line room, and I think they lost like 9 or 10 of them and brought in 2.
Yeah.
You lost a ton of depth.
Yep.
But most of the ones they got rid of felt like the deadweight players that weren't really big-time contributors that you weren't really going to miss off the roster other than eating up some snaps. And so in this year, I feel good about the core pieces that they kept. I like the Desir twins. I like Deontay McCray. I like all these guys. But who's going to be that next group of defensive linemen when that they have to come off the field and take their breath? That's something you heard Ashton Barker, who walked back his comments, but he talked about, who's going to come on the field when those guys got to go take a breath?
I mean, he wasn't lying.
And you know, I know he walked it back, but it's the truth. Who is going to be the guy that comes in for Mandrell Desir? Who is going to be the guy that comes in whenever some of these guys need to take a break? And what does that gap look like, right? Yeah. Are we going to bring in a Grady Kelly type of guy who just really doesn't have any impact on the game? Or are you going to have like a guy who, say, a Fabian Lovett or whatever, who maybe always wasn't the starter but comes in and is an impact guy? That's what I'm looking for most from the defensive line is anyone going to step up to be that guy? Because right now, other than Mandrell Desir, it doesn't feel like we have that guy. And I'm using air quotes on this. I'm talking about a Fisk, a Verse, a whoever. Right. We don't have a game changer. Is anyone ready to step into that role? And then also equally important, what's the depth look like? That's what I'm looking for the defensive line in the spring.
Yeah, I think the big thing is depth. I think it's depth.
And let me just say one thing real quick. Because remember, You can't add anymore. There is no more spring session. Now, you can get whoever else is out there, but what you got is what you got. So that's why you got to figure out what you got.
Now, that's true, except for we could pull a Miami and go get somebody and get them to do a blind transfer. I mean, Miami's proven at least back-to-back seasons, it ain't over till it's over.
They say in racing, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And exactly. Miami's trying real hard because they're cheating like a sun gun.
Listen, so set that aside. I think to me, the biggest thing is depth. I think far as like who's going to be that dude, for sure, that's a question. But before we get to that dude, you need depth. You need to develop the what happens when your number ones come off the field for their breather, right? And you know, Mike Norvell, and still, even to this day, he is still a big proponent of rotating these defensive linemen to get in and out, so that by the fourth quarter, these guys still have a lot of leg left in them, a lot of energy, and they can still be dominant, right? Air quotes. But if you don't have the depth, or at least the depth you're bringing in, like, because we have to clarify this, Jesse, when we say depth, we're not talking about numbers. They got numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prowess, it's skill, it's talent. Yep. Do they have the talent and skill depth behind the number ones to actually make a difference? Because if you're bringing in number twos, right, second stringers, third stringers, rotating, whatever you want to call it, and the talent drops off significantly, which means the production drops off significantly, which means, man, defense or offensive coordinators are just jonesing for when you do your rotating, because they know they're about to hammer you up the middle, they're about to take the edge away, they're about to do all this stuff, right?
Yep.
Because they know when you send in those second string, third string guys, it's not as good. But like when you look at like a Georgia or Ohio State, their fourth string guys probably could equal your second string guys. Like, that's what we mean by depth. And I think that is super important and a question that is really big in determining how far this team can go next season.
1,000% agree. And obviously there's things they can do. Like you said, they got bodies. I mean, they brought in like 8 high school guys. Yeah. They have bodies. It's where's the gap when one comes off? And you can mix guys. Like you can have your number one DN, your number two tackle, so you're not full on twos and threes and stuff like that. But like you said, man, a good offensive coordinator, if they see if they know you're thin at defensive tackle, as soon as you go sub package, they're going to try and pound the ball right towards that weakness, right? And the biggest point out of that is your number ones can be great, but your number twos can't look like number two.
Exactly.
Basically. So that's the one thing that we're looking at out of this defensive line, because to me, that's the biggest question. I can probably tell you who our starters are going to be, and I like almost every one of them.
Yep.
I don't know who's going to be the third defensive tackle.
Right.
I don't know who's going to be the fourth defensive end that might be critical on a play late in the season or something like that if a guy has to miss time. Now, staying in that vein, flipping to the other side of the field, or the other side of the whatever you want to call it, the trenches, because we're going to stay in the offensive line. Because again, as you know, here on Plant the Spear, we consider offensive line number one most important position. Defensive line's probably number two, then quarterback number three, because without the trenches, the rest of it doesn't really matter unless you're a Heisman type level guy. And I hope that's Ashton Daniels. Not confident that's Ashton Daniels. So we're going to focus now on the offensive line. And really the two biggest questions for me out of this is, first and foremost, most importantly, after last year, how healthy are we as a unit? I think that's the number one question on my mind, because we remember last year when Herb Hand got here, he scrambled to get together 5 new starters, did a wonderful job good, talented guys out of the portal. But then they were banged up all spring. Yep. We had heard a lot to where they were trying to make up time in the summer, because fall camp was really the first time that that group had a lot of reps as the starting five. Like you might have 3 here, 2 there, but these guys were out. So these guys missing camp. So that's the big question for me with this new offensive line, because again, just like last year, you have 5 new starters,
right?
Most likely, potentially all new faces to the program too. And so you are going to need those guys to be healthy in the spring so they can start that continuity. Because as we talk about all the time on the show, Michael, is, you know, offensive line, it's one of those positions where if all 5 ain't working together, all 5 probably aren't working, because it's continuity and unity on the offensive line. And so how healthy are they? Are they going to be able to go through spring and get those reps? And then number two is just kind of, how does it look, right? is the chaplain kid coming over from Auburn and Virginia Tech, is he just like, hey, man, I mean, I know he's got a hearing problem, so he had some penalties, but the guy's just really good, right? This guy that came from FCS or G5, like, he's holding his own against Kevin Wynn or against Rylan Kennedy or whoever he's going against in practice, or, man, like, dude just got ran over. Like, that's just in general sense. Like, I'm not worried about how they look as a unit. I just want to know, can they function as a unit so they can get that continuity? And are they able to hold up physically? That's really what I'm looking for. Because, again, my biggest concern with the offensive line from last year to this year, I trust Herb Hand, but you only got, I think, two guys from the Power Four. The rest were either FCS or G5 or things like that. So, or you know, guys that were already on the roster. So that's two of the big things that I'm looking at. How healthy are you? How in sync can you get? And then how physically ready are you for the Power Four level of football?
Yeah, I think your question right there is super important. It's the health. Like, can they stay healthy enough throughout the spring football to be able to create that cohesiveness, that gelling, that working? Like you said, and you played offensive line, like, you understand, if one isn't working well, there none of them are working well, right? Yep. Because if a tackle misses an outside kickout block or a guard doesn't get around on a pull correctly enough, the whole play gets blown up, right? Yep. And so it matters, 1 through 5 on the offensive line there. So I think that's super important. I would add a little caveat to this, and I know we brought in these new 5 starters or potentially new 5 starters from the outside. I think my caveat to this is, where is the high school development?
Yeah, that's a really, really great point.
Where's the high school development this spring? Like, are we seeing an Andre Otto, who's a redshirt junior, I believe? Like, is he factoring into this potential starting? Because remember, we've been saying for, gosh, how many years now, in order for us to solve this offensive line problem to where we're not bringing in 5 new starters every year, you know, Jesse, I believe this is the 4th straight year, maybe, that we're bringing in almost 5 new starters on the offensive line.
It's been a lot.
Line.
I'd have to look back to 23 to 24, but it's a lot.
But, yeah, so, like, I think half of the 24 starters were new. All of the 25 starters were new, right? And now all the 26 starters are new. So either somewhere between 3 to 4 years, we've been bringing in 5 new starters every year, okay, almost every year. What I'm curious about along the question of offensive line is, can they stay healthy all of spring so they can build that cohesiveness? But then, like, a little side caveat is, where's the high school development as far as somebody like an Andre Otto? Is he being factored into this? Because in order for us to solve this long-term problem, we've got to start developing. You look at all the big-name schools, Ohio State, Bama, all that stuff, they're not recruiting offensive linemen from the portal. They're developing them. They're all self-developed, yeah, most of them. And so if we can get to that space, then we can leverage those dollars, those NIL rev share dollars, for, like, other things we need, like defensive linemen, right? Like, that we desperately need, right? Or, you know, some skill players, some linebackers, stuff like that. So I think that's a caveat to that question too.
No, I actually think it's a great point. I think it should be one of the top aspects of that question, because it really is important. Because, you know, even though you brought in the guys to start, like, you lost Jacob Rizzi and stuff. Mm-hmm. So technically you lost 6 guys, if we're being honest. Mm. You lost your 6th man. So you're going to need somebody. Now, Herb Hand, we know, doesn't rotate a whole lot, but injuries happen when you're that big of a body. And so you need some guys to be able to step up. And we need, like, Saman Thompson, Andre Otto, 2 great names that you mentioned that are perfect candidates to be those guys to fill in. And that's really important, because, like you said, the elite programs of the country might supplement out of the portal with their offensive line or their trenches, but most of those are homegrown guys. Like, right now, you want to get an offensive lineman transferring out of Georgia, transferring out of Ohio State, because you know they were a probably big-time high school recruit that's been developed. And it's funny, because you actually, I'm sure our guy Ralph Spartan 071 will probably love that you brought this up, because we actually talked about that in some comments on one of our recent episodes, where he's like, you know, at what point do you start not cutting slack to Herb Hand for his recruiting, right? And when do you see development there? And, you know, I think he was saying a little bit more of a shorter timeline than I was. I was giving it about an extra year, because I was like, you know, you're still kind of flushing Atkins recruits out.
Right.
You're also, you know, with those guys, you have to give them a couple years to get physically capable of coming in. But, I mean, you see guys with freshman offensive linemen or redshirt freshmen or redshirt sophomore guys who are starting for them all the time. Doesn't mean they're the best, but they're serviceable. And right now we're not doing that. So to your point, to Ralph's point, That's a big part of it, right? We need to start seeing something from these high school offensive linemen, and maybe even like the class that he's bringing in. Maybe it's not that they're starters, but maybe you're like, hey man, this, you know, this kid, this the kid from the NFL training academy or whatever. I can't remember his name, but like someone like that, you're like, man, he's better than I thought he was going to be. So at least have something in the an iron in the fire, as they say, right? Because typically with, under Atkins, it was like, ain't none of them good, right? None of them. And so you just didn't know what you were going to do from year to year. So you're right. That's a big part of what we should be watching for in spring if we get to watch. Now, the number five question on our mind right now is probably the other position of question. And that's one that we feel could be good. We feel could be bad based on past results. But it's the question of who's going to be the guys that they brought in that are going to step up. And that's at linebacker, right? This is the one position I'm almost most interested to watch on the defense, because I want to know, Michael, who's going to be the other guy, the other linebacker. First off, I want to know, is Blake ready to go to that next level? Is he ready to be that next step? Because, man, it's getting – I believe this is his money year, and this was a blue-chip recruit coming out of California. We've seen some bright spots. We've seen some bad spots. It's time for him to put it all together. Can he even hold that starting job, right? I assume Chris Jones coming in with 135 tackles from Southern Miss is going to be your linebacker day one. I assume that's going to be the case. And with him, I just want to know, is he as good as advertised, right? Yep. We saw Tatum Bethune come over from UCF as a 100-plus tackler and be a solid college linebacker for Florida State. Can this guy be what Tatum Bethune gave us? Or was he one of those guys that just racked up a ton of production at the G5, G6 level, or whatever you call it now, but really doesn't kind of cut the mustard at the Power Four level? That's some of the things that we're going to be watching there. So for me, it's who's the other linebacker? Is it the Bayer kid that can, by the way, I'm going to stop calling him Gabor because we found out it's Bayer. Bayer is the one that I'm looking at as a guy who's played in Tony White's defense for 2 years, played at North Carolina for another year, has a lot of experience, has played in the 3-3-5. Caleb LaValle is a guy that gives you some athleticism at the linebacker position, who was injured and missed all last year, but went ham in his bowl game against UConn at North Carolina there, the one game that he got the start. And then, you know, Omar Graham's got to fit in this picture somewhere too. Now, I know they're going to allow to do subbing and swapping based on packages, but who's going to be that other guy to step up? And then the last one I want to know is the Isaiah Williams kid, right? This is one of the best linebacker recruits you've signed in a long time. Is he usually with a freshman, you can tell like, okay, it's going to be unpolished, right? He's got to get used to the college game and the speed and everything. But is this a guy that it looks like we can put him on the field in certain situations? And I think back to an Azaria Thomas. He played a lot of snaps. He didn't start till I think his junior year, but he was playing 300 or 400 snaps a year because the kid was so good, you couldn't keep him off the field. That's kind of what I'm looking for with Isaiah Williams. Is it like, oh, well, this is going to be a little bit, right? We got some physical development, things like that. Or is this going to be a kid that's like, man, I know the room's kind of full now, but he's going to get some snaps this year and he's going to be a starter next year. And so with that group, man, it's one, like we talked about in the last defensive episode, right? It's a group that I'm concerned about because of what we've seen the last few years. They just haven't been good. They haven't even really been average. They've been below average. And so the additions they made, I think, can elevate that room, but will they pan out? That's really the one thing that I'm watching with this linebacker room is who's going to be that extra guy to set up. Chris Jones, as good as we hope he's going to be, and what's this freshman look like? Can he really contribute? Because I have a little bit of excitement about this linebacker room, but it's just a little bit until I get to see it. But that's a group that I would have the microscope out on.
Yeah, listen, I love that question because I think it's important. I will even go one further and maybe take it, maybe do like a 30,000-foot question alongside of that. Will this make or break FSU's defense in 2026? Because unlike other defenses, so like Adam Fuller's 4-2-5, right? Unlike the 4-3, unlike the 3, well, no, the 3-4 would be in the same thing. So the 4-2-5, really, unlike that, you can, we always used to say, it doesn't really matter if you have great linebacker play and a 4-2-5 because you can cover that up with the secondary, right? You can leverage secondary and you can do all that. But in a 3-3-5 stack, your linebacker play becomes insanely important. And we saw
especially when you have a questionable defensive line.
Exactly. Thank you. That's my whole point. When you don't, when you're not sure you can trust the depth of the defensive line, the next level becomes even more important. Why? Because Tony White likes to roll down that Sam or that Mike or that Will linebacker to be a fourth person at the line of scrimmage. Sometimes he'll roll down that safety and roll down that safety to be another person at the line of scrimmage, or he'll bring that mic up into a middle gap, an A gap, B gap, potentially even a C gap. They'll do some stunts, some twists, they'll run some games. That linebacker core becomes uber important when you have a suspect depth of a defensive line. And yep. So, you know, yes, what happens with Chris Jones? Is he the guy we think he is? Does a Blake Nicholson take that next step? Or, and the other question, really the one I'm really looking forward to answer this big 30,000 is Isaiah Williams. How fast can you get him ready to be a contributor this season? Not next season, not two seasons from now, this season. Because here's the thing, Jesse, let's be real. If they don't get him into the fold this season, he is a prime transfer candidate because he was wanted by so many schools.
And he chose so many of them, too.
Yes, he did. Yes, that's a good point. But if they can get him ready, then I think you will begin to feel better about that linebacker depth coming behind a suspect defensive line depth.
Yeah, it's like the Chroma thing, where last year it's like, man, you got to get him some carries because people are going to come trying to pick him off. If you don't, you have to make him happy with playing time. But that's a huge one, man. And I agree. I think it's just because there's so much importance between how the defensive line and the linebackers work in this defense. Whereas like last year, your defensive line wasn't good, but your linebacker play made it 10 times worse. Even if your defensive line was good, you couldn't cover with your linebacker. So there was always a weakness to be poked somewhere. And so that's kind of what you're looking at with these two. You at least need one to be able to make up for the other, or both to at least be average, above average, right? And that would do a lot for the defense. So that's the five questions that are burning on the back of our mind. Now, we have two quick honorable mentions that didn't make the list as we were kind of going through these. And so one of the most important ones for me that, you know, anytime you make change, it brings change. So something will look different here, but I don't think you'll be able to gauge the impact until probably partial way into the season, probably not even in spring camp or fall camp, but that is the impact that the new coaches are going to make. Remember, we have a couple of new coaches on staff.
Yep.
This will be the first time that our secondary has been coached by a new face in a couple of years. And they had a pretty solid year in 2023, helped out by a great defensive line and linebackers. But, you know, Michael, the one thing we've said about our secondary in 24 and 25 was there's a lot of talent.
That's right.
It's just not equaling the talent level that it should be, right? We're not seeing the play on the field equal the talent level in recruiting rankings and things like that. Right. So I wonder what it's going to look like under a new coach. Could it be better? Because, you know, I don't know, maybe the recruiting is better or worse than Surtain was. Maybe, maybe not. But the coaching is what I'm really interested in because the secondary has been underperforming. So I'm watching for that. Again, I don't know that you're going to be able to tell that this early on, but it's just something to keep an eye on. And the reason I even bring that up is because the edges coach, Nick Williams, they put out a couple of things, clips of him and whatnot. And man, he brings some energy in practice and it's infectious. And I watched a 30-second clip from Tour of Duty and I was ready to go run through a wall. So it's like, you know, man, sometimes just bringing a different personality and different energy into a room changes things. And so that is something that I'm interested to watch. And you know, as we talked about earlier, where I think the way the edges played last year and knowing that Terrence Knighton was a nose tackle by trade, I think it was a good move to bring in someone to help them out. And so that is one of the things that I'm looking at that, again, you probably won't be able to gauge this early, but it's going to be a change. And so I'm interested to see how both of these coaches affect their position.
Yeah. And I'll just say real quickly to that, it's like, and not to harp on Mike Norvell, but this is why fans were probably clamoring for a change, because when you bring in a new voice, it brings in new buy-in. It brings in new vision. Yeah. It brings in new excitement. It brings in new determination. It brings in new willpower. It brings in a will to win, like, because you hear a new perspective of things. And so it's really exciting to hear these guys, especially the defensive end guy. I agree with you, moving Pot Roast to just focus on defensive tackle and actually having a specialized person to really deal with the defensive ends, I think it's going to be a huge asset to that.
Yeah. And then the other one that we had, the other honorable mention, that was kind of my honorable mention. This is the one that you came up with, was what does Mike Norvell's, and I'll let you expand on this if I phrased it wrong, but how does Mike Norvell's kind of mentality look now that he's back to calling plays? He's not just the CEO who kind of has to stand by and, you know, kind of what do I do? How do I fit in this? He's back to being the guy now, right? And maybe that year off was good for him, not for the record, but maybe for him.
Yeah.
that's going to be one thing to watch in practice. Is he back to being gung-ho, Mike? Is he back to doing all that stuff? Or, you know, is he just kind of like so focused in the play calling and stuff like that, that it's going to be interesting to see his mentality? Because we've talked about that, and I'll take it back to you on this. We've talked about that a lot on this show about there's a lot of things that need fixed in this program. Mike Norvell's mental mentality is probably the number one thing that needs to be fixed.
Absolutely. Like, just real quick, if you go back to 24 when everything was falling apart, coming off the snub, there's that game. There's that iconic game. You were there. I was in Montana at Boston College at Doak Campbell Stadium when I think they go up like 14 or 17, whatever it was, and the cameras pan over to Mike, and he just looks just petrified. Like, he just knew in that moment, oh, this is going downhill. And ever since that moment, he has not been this. I mean, ever since the snub, he's not been the same. But that moment, that moment is iconic.
That's when it became real.
That's when it became real, when it started to show on his face. So then everyone clamored for him to give up play calling. Well, I think the problem with him giving up play calling was he just looked so aloof. He looked so detached from the team. He didn't know what to do with himself on game day. I mean, outside of them scoring touchdowns and him doing this, what else was he really doing, right? What else was he really doing? I think the one of the keys for us to watch this spring, if we get a chance to peek in, is what does Mike's MO and mentality and just vibe feels like? That now he's had a year off from play calling. He's been able to assess the organization, the offense, the defense, special teams, coaches, everything, how they do all that stuff. He's got a GM that's now taking the recruiting and the negotiating office play. Do we see 2020 to 2023 Mike Norvell back again, where he is just like, he's just like, I know we're a PG show. He's just a killer. He's just a murderer. Like, that boy got that look in his eye. He's got the black hoodie on, or whatever it is, the gray hoodie on again. That mentality, Mike, does that come back with now that he's been able to assess and now he's got the play call? He's at the helm again. He's got his quarterback, whether that's Ashton Daniels or Nelson or Sperry, and he's running. That's what I'm curious to see out of coming out of spring.
Yeah, I don't know who this quarterback Nelson is, but I hope he's good.
Marshall. Gosh, dang it.
Maybe it's a guy we don't know, but they've been keeping him under wraps. Hey, we'll be good. But no, I think you're right, man. That's the huge part of it, because you saw a flip from the snub. And then it's just like Georgia Tech in 24, you could kind of explain it away a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have fluke game, you should have won, a couple mistakes. That Boston College game was where it really started to feel like, you know, it's one of those where, like they say, watching a train wreck or whatever, like you don't want to watch it, but you can't look away at the same time.
Right.
And so that's the one big thing that we need to see this year, because especially with Gus's presence gone now too, like you got to be the big voice in the room, because now, you know, we always question how that was going to work. We heard it didn't go well behind the closed doors, where you bring in a guy with all that experience and that pedigree and things like that. Well, now it's Mike Norvell and Tony White and Tim Harris Jr. Mike Norvell is the guy with the, I know it's not always all good, but he's the guy with the cachet behind his name right now. And so you need to be that guy again. So that's what a big part of what I'm going to be watching in this spring as well. Now, Michael, we got some more football talk to go here before we touch on baseball and basketball. But I just want to interrupt and just say, man, if you guys are enjoying this content, drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. Drop a rate and review on the podcast. Give us a follow on social media. We got some big things planned. I've been really busy. That's kind of part of the reason that we took the last week off. I can't quite tell you what's going on yet. I promise this isn't some vague tweet that we're getting some five-star recruit that Plant the Spears paying for us. I ain't got to like that. But just some cool things for us here at Plant the Spear that we're looking at rolling out in the near future. So, man, now's a really good time to jump on. Like, we're not getting picked up by ESPN or not, you know, whatever the case may be. I don't want to like everyone be speculating on anything crazy, but we've been doing a lot of work under the hood, and we got some cool things that we're planning on rolling out for you guys. So now would be a great time to jump on board with us here at Plant the Spear. And so definitely stay tuned for that. Now, Michael, let's get into a little bit more football talk here before we transition to the other sports. And one of the things that was kind of making a little bit of waves here, kind of as a funny joke more than anything, is the booster tour getting paused or postponed or whatever the case may be. And I didn't read into this a whole lot. I think a lot of it, when you look at it, some of the context was that other schools, I'll let you fill in the gaps on this, but a lot of other schools are doing this too. So it's not just Florida State. So I don't want to paint Florida State in a bad light, because they made a decision that other teams already aren't. Now, it's like your mom always said, if the neighborhood kids jump off a bridge, are you going to jump off a bridge? No, but we're doing it anyway. So the funny thing is with the booster tour, I think they really just don't want Mike Norvell to end up with another black eye, if we're being honest. That's really the ultimate goal here. It's an interesting decision, right?
Yes,
because I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier in the show, where no one cares about what he has to say anymore. And I mean this as respectfully as possible to Michael Bell.
Yes.
I don't care what you have to say to a microphone. There is nothing Mike Norvell can say at a microphone aside from Jesus himself is going to be our quarterback next season and we have divine intervention. Other than that, there's nothing you can say to invoke excitement about me other than going and win on Saturdays.
Right.
And that, to the point about spring practice being open, like you said, it ain't a selling point by Mike Norvell. It's me watching the players. It's me seeing sustenance that makes me believe. Booster tours are all song and dance. It's, oh, I believe in this, and we're doing things at a high level, and we're going to climb or whatever. It's like, buddy, we done fell down them stairs twice. Now let's stop talking about climbing. So I think it's interesting to a point where, like we talked about in the beginning, you're trying to encourage enthusiasm amongst boosters, but also you're probably going to get more pitchforks than you are dollar checks. I don't know what I was trying to say there, but
dollar checks. Yeah. Yeah.
Dollar checks. You know, them dollar checks. That's probably all they're getting right now is dollar checks. But if you want to get more than dollar checks, you need to invoke some excitement.
Yeah.
So I understand both sides of it, right? I understand where it's like you can't really prove anything until you prove something on the field.
That's
but
right.
I also understand. So keeping him hid is maybe a good thing, but I also feel like it feels like you're hiding too. Right. And that might not be the best look at a time when it's not going good at the program too. So interesting take on both sides. I just want to touch on that for a quick second, but I'll throw it back to you. Get some thoughts.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just real quick, as you said already, like this is not just a FSU thing. We're seeing this around the country. A lot of programs are trying to save money now that they're having to redirect a lot of that money towards the players. They're trying to save money from doing booster tours. Booster tours are not cheap. They're free to the boosters to show up, but there's food. I went to one in Orlando last year. There's food. They got to rent the hotel. They got to do all the things, little free giveaways that they have, all that stuff. It costs money for them to put that on. So if they could take that money and redirect it, they're going to. They're trying to leverage every amount of financial opportunities to get money towards players to be able to get the best rosters in the country. So you're seeing this all around the country. The reason why it's a little bit of a thing for Florida State is because, one, like you said, Jesse, ain't no way are they trying to get Mike Norvell in front of the boosters right now, because he'd be getting boosted right out of that hotel room pretty quickly. And again, no offense to you, Mike Norvell, like as a person, but right now, you know, as a coach, you have not accomplished your mission, which is to climb, right? You have not been climbing. You've been decelerating, declimbing, falling, tripping, all the terminology you want to use there. And so to then try to bring you up in front of the boosters and say, man, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to be the best, this.
Yep.
Man, the boosters are, yeah. They
boost you up on it. Yeah.
You up on out of there. So it makes sense to me why they're not doing it. But again, Jesse, to go back to an earlier point we said in the show, what gap you leave in the narrative, people will fill that gap with their own narrative. So Florida State should figure out a way, if they're not going to do the booster tour, I don't know if it's interviews. I don't know if it's getting Mike on Instagram a little bit. No, that might be bad.
Yeah,
something. Get Mike out there and tell Mike, calm the rhetoric down on the climb and all the football vernacular, and just speak honestly to this fan base. Hey, guys, we know we haven't been where we are. We are trying. We are working hard. Here's some things, man, we're excited about. We've seen this, and this in our tour of duty. We're seeing this. We're working together. We're not going to come. We know this is getting ready to walk in, as we like to call it here at Plant the Spirit, talking season. We're not going to be talking. We're just going to be showing. Do something so that fans don't fill in the narrative where the gap is.
Yeah, bring that do something on back.
Yeah,
we're going through all the sayings right now,
Dr.
right? we just go in with the Willie Taggart sayings and everything. We just bring them all back.
I didn't even think about that. Do something.
But you're right, man. I don't think it would be a bad thing. I mean, like you said, maybe go from Southern Baptist preacher to like Southern librarian. Like, yes. Honey, I know it's a mess, but we gonna be all right. You know what I mean? Maybe we could take that approach more than we do the Southern Baptist approach. But yeah, I think when you say fill in the narrative, I think that's the problem, right?
Yep.
This news comes out on the back of everything negative that's happened to this program, and people just assume it's because you're trying to hide him from everyone else. And, you know, my thing is the win-win situation is like, okay, let's just charge for these booster events. Let's charge for the spring game if you want to bring it back. And just like Michael Alford, just be straight up, man. Hey, look, we're going to take all these ticket sales and put it in the Fire Mike Norvell fund. So if things don't work out, we can fire him. And if he's good enough to stay, we'll put it in the NIL fund. So either way, your money's going to a good use. And I think fans would get behind that and support that. So the last thing we want to talk about here, football related, and we're going to make it quick so we don't run you guys too long. There are some new rule changes being proposed in college football. There's some stuff with new targeting stuff. None of this is official yet, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. Apparently, of all the things going on in college football right now, we're worried about kids having leg coverings and wearing pants, and so it's just the craziest thing. But the one that I wanted to focus on is a new penalty for taking transfers outside of the window, basically trying to circumvent the transfer process. Now, this has to be approved in April, but if it is approved in April, it will go into effect immediately. I think they all but called this the Miami rule from what we've seen with the kid they got from Nebraska with Mensa and all that stuff. So basically they said, man, hey, if an enrolled, once enrolled, a student athlete who is not active in the transfer portal at the time or the transfer participates in any athletically related activity at the next school, the following actions would occur. So basically, if you steal a player from one school to the other after the Mensa situation, I'm going to be your starting quarterback. Portal's closed. Now we're already jumped in the last day. Now we're down there. There's some pretty stiff penalties, man. Yeah. The head coach would be prohibited from all football recruiting on and on-field coaching and administrative duties, team meetings, through the sixth contest of the season. So you would have a six-game suspension from coaching and recruiting. That is massive. Now, huge. Mario Cristobal ain't a very good coach anyway, so you could probably
lose. They might actually win a national title.
Exactly. They stopped losing games in October. Can we suspend him for the last six games? The school would be fined 20% of its football budget, and that is not minor. That is huge when you're talking about these budgets that are growing to Florida State's was, what, $200 million or whatever. That's athletic budget, but whatever they spend on football. And the school would be required to reduce the number of roster spots by 5 for the next season, regardless of the head coach's employment status at the school. So, man, these are huge, right? These are some pretty darn hefty penalties. I think it needs to happen.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie. I think it needs to happen. But my biggest question with all that, and I only really brought this up because I wanted to make fun of Miami, but 90% of the question that I have with this is, it sounds great, but like everything else in college football, can you enforce it? Because every time something like this happens, they go to, perfect example, Ole Miss. You go to your honorable Ole Miss fan presiding judge, and you just get it overturned in your circuit court. So
exactly,
it's a start because we need rules like this, but can they enforce it?
Yeah. I mean, let me just say this real quick. What frustrates me so much about this is I understand if this is a issue about something with Title IX or the school or accepting a kid. Absolutely. I agree that legally a kid should be allowed to enroll at Florida State. No, let me do it this way. A kid should be allowed to enroll at the University of Florida, then decide, you know what? I don't want to go to the school anymore. And they can enroll at Florida State, right? Because any kid can do that. Any student can do that. You can enroll at Florida State and then say, I don't want to be there, and go somewhere else if they will accept you, for sure.
Right.
You don't have to be an athlete. The problem I have is that if you do that under athletic circumstance, the law has said that the NCAA is the overarching body around governing athletic ability, eligibility in the collegiate athletes, right? So you've already given power to the NCAA to do that. What frustrates me is that you can go to these courts, like, you know, your buddy who's a booster and a judge at Ole Miss, or like in the Alabama basketball case, in the Bediako case, where they went to an Alabama judge and he got an injunction so that he could play basically almost 10 games before the higher courts ruled him ineligible. Like, that's ridiculous. When you sign up to be a part of the athletic part of college, you turn over your rights to the NCAA, right? Okay. And so for me, it's like, I hope they can figure out a way to enforce this, because that was one of the biggest reasons why you got rid of a spring window, so that kids couldn't just come, get their money, and then leave. That was another reason why spring football went away for most schools, because they were afraid that if they were out on the field and these people would see these kids playing, and then they would entice them to jump into the portal in spring. Now you're having this fact where after the winter portal season, they can still go transfer, blind transfer is what they call it. Like, I hope they're able to make this enforceable. But like you said, it's a difference between hope and actually doing it.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, people are going to find a way to circumvent the rules, especially right. like the Clemson linebacker situation.
Oh, yeah.
It's just insane of how that played out. And that's the type of stuff that needs to get cleaned up, right? Kids should be allowed to transfer, just like coaches move, all that good stuff. I get all that. But once you sign these contracts, once you go into the season, you know, like the Duke situation, it's not even so much that he decided to leave, because I get it, man. That's fine. You get a big paycheck down there. The problem is you had already signed a piece of paper telling Duke, we don't need to go shop for another quarterback right. because we just paid you $4 million to be our quarterback. And then you're like, nah, I don't want to do that anymore.
Right, right.
That's the bad part. You need to make some of this enforceable. You need to bring some rules into the game. But again, it's how much you can enforce it. And, you know, it's funny, though, as much as I pick on Miami about this whole Mensa situation, Duke did the same thing to Tulane, absolutely. Right? They paid $4 million to steal Tulane's quarterback. So it's hard to feel bad. I just want to – across the board, right? That's all I'm asking for. But it's a start. At least they were proposing some rules.
Right.
And we'll see how it plays out. But again, you got to be able to enforce it, because without that enforcement art, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't do right. any good. Now, the last couple things we want to touch on here, baseball season is going. We did a preseason for you guys. We were going to kind of wait until we saw them play in some competition. We knew they had the Arlington series coming up, so we knew they were going to get tested. This is why we decided to wait, because we have some results to talk about. And then we're going to close with basketball, because those guys have earned the right to be talked about. And so right now, man, we're going to – let's focus in on baseball. Now, I got to say a couple things before we get into baseball, right? There are some red flags that have popped up with this team, for sure. With that being said, it's baseball. It's early. This is not football where you start 1-2 and your season is over, right?
Right.
I don't know in the history of ever has a college baseball or MLB team ever gone undefeated. It just doesn't happen. Teams can be sloppy at the beginning of the season and be on fire and go win in Omaha at the end. There have been a number of upsets. I think Kent State just beat Tennessee twice, won the yep. series against them. This is baseball. And now with the transfer portal, and you can pay and expand scholarships and things like that under the house settlement, these little teams are nothing to mess around That's with, right? They got some guys. I mean, again, BJ Gibson, great example, now playing at community college. We thought he was going to be a starter for us this year. Yep. So weird things happen in baseball, right? At the same time, things look good when you're playing James Madison. Things look good when you're playing North Florida and Jacksonville and things like that. This past weekend gave us a taste of what it was like to play Power Four competition and some pretty decent teams. I'm not even going to say good, because Nebraska, right. we don't know what they're going to be, but right. they haven't really shown to even be great yet. And, you know, things started off, man, with – and I don't want to, like, go through every single game because it's kind of old news now, right. but we're just going to talk about that. But, man, when you talk about the Michigan series, the Michigan game, that one looked good, right? Yep. You put up some runs. Wes Mendez looks great for you. I think the Auburn game was kind of like, okay, where you were challenged against a really good team.
Yep.
You lost. It didn't look great, but it was competitive. You had a couple chances to win that game late. Nebraska was non-competitive. They got whooped in Texas by that Nebraska team, and that was the one that really concerned me the most. And so when we break it down to kind of where we're at with this team, like, man – the bats, I think they'll get kind of figured out, right? Miles Bailey had two home runs against North Florida. You're seeing, gosh, he sent one into a different area code. That kid is a freak. And so you're seeing the bats kind of in a good way. You're seeing some kids start to step up now. You're seeing Braden Dowd's doing good. You know, yeah. I hate that you lost Jace Estes, because he yeah. had a really good game yep. at the plate. Hopefully he'll be back sometime soon, although his seems to be stretching out a little bit farther. You got some bats that are stepping up, right? Chase Williams has got some things to work out right now. He's been a disappointment in the lineup. But, man, the overall thing is there's some things that are just not – some that are not FSU baseball-esque, Link Jarrett-esque, like some fielding issues that need to be cleaned up. You know what I mean? Like the injury play that even happened is things that, like, man, you got to be able to call and know who's got priority right there. You know, it's just little things like that that led to some issues there. But man, the problem for me more than anything is the same problem that we seem to have every year. And I'm not ready to have the conversation about firing Michael Posey yet. We've hinted at it last year when the bullpen was bad after the year before that. It's becoming more of a louder topic right now, right? Because you did a great job with Jamie, who was pretty good when he came here. Vellini was already an experienced transfer last year and stuff like that. But right now, man, it looks like you got Wes Mendez, who, by the way, they get credit for that. If you're going to talk about the bad, you got to talk about the good. Wes looks like a bona fide Friday night starter with MLB upside. The kid is taking a big step, and he's throwing gas. He's great. Johnny A is a good 1-2 combo with him. So you got those guys working. After that, it gets a little sketchy, right? Trey Beard is the one X factor that I'm waiting to see. He came in relief in that middle game, and it was one of those where it was kind of like, you knew that he started off hot, right? He started off looking pretty good. Things got a little loose late, but this is the kid that was coming off being sick, had lost weight to the point he was trying to get physically ready. I'm not going to judge him off that performance, right? Let me get him 10 innings or so back to his normal 100% self, yeah. And then we'll see what that looks like. But you need him to step up in a big way,
yep.
Because right now it doesn't look like you got any bona fide starters besides Wes Mendez, unless yep. Trey Beard turns out to be that guy. And even then on Sundays, it's even more questionable because Bryson Moore has not been the guy that you thought he was.
Correct.
And so when you're talking about this pitching situation, the bullpen is questionable again. Now, we haven't seen some of the arms in there, and again, they're going to have time to kind of figure things out. But, man, right now the red flag for me is we got some pitching problems. I mean, yep. The 9 runs that you gave up to North Florida, a lot of that was on hit by pitch, on free yep. passes, by walks, by pass balls, by things like that. You just don't have the consistency. And coming into this year, that was supposed to be the one thing they addressed, the one thing that they fixed. They added all these arms. A lot of it were experienced Power 5 transfers and stuff like that. You got some struggles right now, man. You got some real life struggles on this pitching staff. And I do think you'll find some guys get into more defined roles. I think the more game reps you get, because one thing I do know about this baseball team, Link doesn't really assign positions early in the preseason. So the more time you get with a set lineup and these guys get used to playing that position and playing together, I think the defensive mistakes will get cleaned up. You got a lot of new faces out there this year. You don't have Lodison Ferreau coming back, which is, you could count on that like clockwork. Those things have to get fixed. I think the bats will be okay. I'm worried about them against better pitching. But again, you know, we saw Bailey last year go from striking out a lot to the hottest hitter in the country. It's the pitching that's going to be making me nervous, just like it has been the last 2 years. And so, man, you got the win against UNF, so it was not, you're not proving anything by that, but it was nice to get back in the win column. You got the Citadel coming up. Today's game on Friday has been postponed to a doubleheader tomorrow. That's a team that you should beat handily. We'll see how that goes. But, man, I mean, you got a really, really, really tough ACC schedule with a Florida series in there too. Yep. So you're going to need to start getting things together in this kind of preseason bumping around, figuring things out position before you get into ACC play, because you got a hard schedule. And yeah. So we'll see how it goes, man. But give me some thoughts on this baseball team. And you were out in Arlington at the series, so got to take that all in person. Sorry for your experience there. Didn't go so okay. Well, but I know it was fun there in Globe Life Field, Texas Ranger Stadium, man. Tell me all about the experience and some thoughts on this baseball team. As right now, I'm never going to count Link out.
No.
But I'm a lot more nervous than I was when we did our preseason preview.
Yeah, absolutely. I think outside of the first year with Link here, the last 3 years, he's proven that he can figure this out. And so we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, hey, we've seen some things early. It's like I said in the question I asked Link after the Auburn loss when we were on the field. I said, or when we were in the back room down there, I asked him, I said, hey, you know, I heard an old baseball coach once tell me either you win or you learn. You know, what did you learn about this team? And he had a really good answer. One of the reasons I love interviewing Link is because he will tell you straight. He's not going to give you all that jargon and sugarcoating and all like that.
Him and Mike Norvell are polar opposites.
Exactly. Mike should take some lessons from him. But he will tell you straight. And he talked about where they were failing at, where some of the not trusting the film. Like against the Nebraska, he talked about how he said, you know, we give these kids so much data. It's up to them to actually use the data, which was like a coach way of saying they're not using it. They're not taking the study, the film study, the data points seriously enough to, and it would have helped because they were chasing pitches in the dirt. They were chasing pitches off the plate. I mean, it was just from the batting standpoint. I do think, now to sum it up, I do think the batting will get better. I think the bats will come back alive because after that first inning against Auburn, the bats literally went almost MIA, MIA. And it was just bad. I think they'll come back. I'm not worried necessarily right now about the bats. I'm with you. And I have a great quote by the great poet, rest in peace, Maya Angelou. She said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. That is directed at Micah Coach
Posey.
Micah. Yeah, Micah Posey. Listen, I like you, Micah, but you have shown us consistently that this bullpen is going to be an issue every single year. And here we are again in 2026 with the bullpen being an issue again. This is what really cost us in the Corvallis region last year, right? Yeah. This is what cost us the year before that in the World Series. Like, we just could not get over and find the right kind of arms to be able to show at the right kind of time. I am massively concerned about the bullpen. Like, outside of Abraham, who do you trust to come out of the pen?
Yeah.
Who's your Saturday starter, right? If Trey Beard doesn't get developed as well as we think he can. Now, I will say with Trey Beard, the first two innings, he struck out six. I mean, he was dealing. Yeah. And it was that third inning that he got that kind of he ran into some traffic and some issues, and they pulled him because they were obviously on a pitch count and all like that, building up that stamina again. I like what I saw in those first two innings. Can they get that more consistently? But outside of that, and maybe Abraham.
Yeah. No, you're right
on that.
Yeah, because I think with Trey Beard, again, I go, that's to a health thing, right? Yep. And that was his first appearance of the year, yep, in a big stadium, first time ever playing in Garnet Gold and all that stuff. I think once the nerves settle down, the health gets back, he's back to him 100%. I think you'll see him be fine, right? Is it going to be Jamie Arnold? Maybe not. Can he be Joey Vellini for you? Probably so. That's what I think you need to see. It's just, man, you need to win Friday and Saturday, because yep, Sunday is going to get a little bit sketchy. And, I mean, even we've seen with bringing Manca in, like, he had, yep, some good innings. Mm-hmm. But against UNF, but as a starter, when they rolled, mm-hmm, him out on Sunday, it wasn't that great. And so
lit up,
like you said, you just worry about the inconsistency more than anything. And really, from Wes and Trey Beard's standpoint, you need them to go long, exactly, innings. You, yep, need 5 to 7 innings, because I don't trust this bullpen unless you have like a good 5 to 6 run lead. And so we'll see how things get hammered out. Again, it's a very long season. We're 7 games into it. They got you know, some tune-up competition to go, where guys can just get reps and get, right, better and develop those roles. And so we'll see. Again, I trust Lincoln. I trust that baseball team. But, you know, preseason to now, this is why we waited to talk about him, because there's some concerns that I think could really, right, limit the ceiling for this team if they don't get them worked out. Now, lastly, on to basketball. And, you know, we cover basketball pretty loosely here. But, man, these guys have earned this right, man. They have been on a tear. They won 7 of the last 10 games, and their 3 losses were a close loss on the road to SMU. They lost a heartbreaker, a game they should have won, against a ranked Virginia team, and then they lost at home to a good Miami team that they already beat once this season.
Right.
Now, the thing is, man, like, they have got some momentum going late in the season. I don't know how long that's going to, or how far that's going to carry them. I don't know if they're going to end up making the tournament. Probably not. It seems like a long shot, unless they just really wow in the ACC championship and tournament and stuff like that. But you got some winnable games coming up too, man. You got Georgia Tech, who you should win that game. You got Pitt, you should win that game. And you got SMU at home this time around, that you only lost by 3 on the road. So if you can win 2 out of the last 3, maybe 3 out of the last 3, you're sitting in a good place for the ACC tournament. Maybe you can even finish at 9th or above, where you get that first day bye, which would be huge. But overall, man, I mean, when you look at this team, I think the struggles early were really scary. But what you've seen from late, and you know a lot more about basketball than I do, so I'm not going to sit up here and waste a lot of hot air on basketball that I don't know a whole lot of what I'm talking about. But I think what it is you're seeing what Luke Laux's vision can be when, yeah, things start clicking, right? Yeah. You understand there's some – we had to throw together a portal class kind of late to have a team this year after the coaching change and a lot of guys left. So you're working with what you got. And I believe they're top 10 in recruiting next year. They just had another top, yeah, 100 commit. So this late season momentum is great for recruiting, yeah, because if you can show what the finished product can look like, and if you can use that to recruit, and then you bring in, if you hang on to a top 10 class going into next year, you might want to watch out, because Luke Laux, yep, and Florida State basketball can make some noise. And I mean, right now you're seeing a lot of guys like Robert McRae. I know he wasn't very good against Miami, but man, that run of like 9 games before, yep, that, he's been one of the best basketball players in the ACC.
Yep.
And so it's been really impressive to watch the turnaround that they've had, going from some really disappointing early season losses, yep, to, man, they're doing pretty darn good at the end of the season. If they can get 2 of these last 3 and make some noise in the ACC tournament, again, I don't know how far that takes them as far as the season goes. I don't know if they would, you know, do the NIT thing or whatnot. But it just shows what it can be. It shows the vision, and it's getting the recruiting momentum. And, man, if they can finish strong, basketball – look, I got Alumni Hall. They talk about all sports. Look, I got my FSU basketball shirt right here. I almost wore it today, but it messes up the camera when you wear a light-colored shirt. That's the only reason I didn't wear it. But, man, I'm liking what I'm seeing from this basketball team. And that win at Clemson was huge. I hate that they followed up with a loss to Miami. But, I mean, this is a team that's showing you they can go toe-to-toe with some teams and win some big games. The Virginia game, they should have won that. They beat the brakes off Virginia Tech. You can see it. And that's the important part right now. You can see it. They're gathering talent. And if they can keep that talent, you can see where it can go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go back, one of the things that I thought was so important to that, you know, because prior to Miami, they had won 7 out of 8, obviously with that big blowout against Virginia Tech, obviously the surprising win. They hadn't won in Clemson in a long time. I think it was 6 straight losses they had at Clemson. So to get that win was huge. But if you go back, you know, Luke Louts came into the season wanting to have this layup and threes offense. Very NBA. If you want a college example of that, look at Alabama. They run that same type of offense. And so they were jacking up threes, and they just weren't falling. They were getting blown out. They're undersized, so that they were getting killed on the boards, which is rebounding. They weren't able to rebound what they needed to rebound, and they were just getting dominated. Well, there's an interview out there somewhere where Luke Louts talks about how, I think it was after, I can't remember which game it was, where they got blown out really, really bad. And he said the coaches came in and they stayed until like 3 or 4 in the morning. And he said they just hashed it out. They just figured it out. They had to have real hard, honest conversations with each other. And they basically came out and said, we are determined that we are going to drive the basketball. Yeah, we're going to hit a three if it's open there, but it's not just going to be jacking up. We're going to get really determined and nasty about rebounding the ball. And next thing you know, 7 out of 8 wins start to happen. And they lost a heartbreaker to Virginia. They were just this close away from pulling that massive upset to be that. They were this close away from beating Miami. Miami's good. Obviously, the final score, I think it was a 10-point margin there. But like most of that game was pretty close early on.
It was close, yeah.
It was close. Yeah. They had an opportunity there. You don't walk into the, you know, the Tuck, all the kids with free beers and stuff like that, man. They were that crowd was rowdy. I love what we saw there. And like you said, it gives us a glimpse of what can happen when he actually gets the kinds of players that can actually make a difference. Now imagine the group he's got coming in next year, and if he could retain a couple from this year's team, you know, I think McCray, I think he has the eligibility to come back one more year, I believe. And so if he does, and you add that to this next year's team, man, you're looking at a team that can really make some damage next year. Now, what I'll say, and I'll throw this back to you on this, for this year, is all you really want to see is them keep improving, because everyone who watches any amount of basketball, especially college basketball, knows you just need to get hot at the right time. You just need to get – how many times have you heard of stories where teams going into their conference championship tournament, you know, they only have 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, whatever it is, and then they get hot, they win their conference tournament, which gets them a ticket to the NCAA dance, and they win maybe 1 or 2 games there. That's all you really want to see.
Yeah.
Can he get this team hot at the right time to do a little bit of damage in the NCAA tournament to make the committee think a little bit about Florida State?
Yeah, it's proof of concept. And, you know, I think someone had said it the other day. I saw on social media, they're like, there's probably not another team you'd want to not want to play right now than Florida State, because they're one of the hottest teams in the country after such a dismal start. So kudos to them for turning it around. Again, the proof of concept is there, and it makes you excited for what the future can be, because, you know, it's just like baseball, man. When basketball is good, it's fun. It's just we've been so up and down at the school, and it's a football school, and I get it. It's a secondary sport for us. It's not like the Dukes and North Carolinas of the ACC, but it would be nice for them to be good. And you knew, you know, when you parted ways with Leonard Hamilton, you were going to have to start over, and it was probably going to be a little bit of a rough year. And the way things started, you were a little bit worried, did we make the right decision? But, man, then you see the turnaround. You see the proof of concept. Like you said, it just took them coming together and being like, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to follow this mission.
Right.
And so if they can get that talent in and retain some talent and do some stuff like that, man, you can see the future of the basketball program. And I mean, it's exciting. You got a lot of guys that are contributing here and there. You know, Alex Steen and Chauncey and all those guys that are over there, like, It's exciting. It's fun to watch. And yeah. So, man, I'm hoping that this carries over into the offseason. Who knows? Maybe they surprise in the ACC. Maybe they make it the tournament. Who knows? And they surprise and win a game, man. We'll see. But that's going to be it for today, guys. We had a lot to talk about. We had some football. We had some baseball. And we had some basketball to end on. So we really appreciate you guys rocking for us the whole show. And again, if you like the content that we're bringing you, if you enjoy our stupid jokes, if you like just the fan side of things, we are a fan outlet built for you, the fans. And so that is how we try and approach everything. If you enjoy that, drop a like and subscribe on the channel. We've grown a little bit, Michael. We're closing in on that 3,000 number. We're getting close. We're a little bit off, about 150 off, but I know we can do it sooner than later. So drop a like and subscribe on the channel. It's free. It doesn't sign you up for anything, and it really, really does help us out. Rate and review on the podcast. I have noticed most of you guys listen on Apple Podcasts. Just a quick 5-star rating on there would really help us reach other Noel fans, get recommended to other ones. Because, you know, we were talking about earlier, trying to grow, and it's a lot word of mouth, and you guys do a great job of it. So we really appreciate you passing on the word of Plant the Spear. And with that being said, guys, we will catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles.